On September 19th, 2022, a bearded and beaming man walked out of the Baltimore courthouse into the sunlight, waving and smiling at the crowd that stood on the steps cheering him. Behind him were the smiling faces of two of the women in his life who had done so much to bring this day to pass. First of all, his mother, Shamin, whose steadfast love and support over the years had kept him going. And the other smiling face was that of Rabia Chaudhry, the woman who had worked for over 20 years to bring this day to pass. The woman who had driven around with boxes of documents in the trunk of her car and who had finally managed to get his case put out into the public domain. He was a free man. He was walking out without a jumpsuit on and without shackles. His name, of course, was Adnan Syed. He had spent well over 20 years for the murder of his ex-girlfriend named Haman Lee. I was thrilled. I had been following this case since the very first episodes of the groundbreaking serial podcast had dropped in October of 2014. I was obsessed with the case. If there was a week with no episode, I was bereft. Once the serial podcast ended, I latched onto Undisclosed and then Truth and Justice, although at the time it was called The Serial Dynasty, hosted by the basso profundo voiced Bob Ruff. I loved it. Every update, every episode, every addendum. But in the end, after about 2 years in 2016, things kind of ground to a halt. Adnan's defense team was trying desperately to get him a new trial. Post-conviction relief hearings were held, and finally the purple unicorn, Asia McLean, was heard from, the young woman who everyone thought could give Adnan an alibi. Alas, no new trial. But finally, during the time that Marilyn Mosby was the state attorney general, a decision was made to pursue some old cases under the auspices of a piece of legislation called the Juvenile Restoration Act, or JRA. And a lawyer named Becky Feldman had been given the job of going through old files of juveniles who had been convicted of serious crimes, mostly murder, and then given life sentences. Adnan's case was one of the ones that she pulled and said, "This one deserves another look. I think this should be vacated." And so it was. But, of course, the backlash was swift and sure. Absolutely to be expected with a case like this one, in which there are so many controversies and so many sharp disagreements, and frankly, so much money to be made by bloggers and podcasters and writers. But the most telling pushback came from Haman Lee's family. Her mother, her brother, and her uncle, who had all this time said steadfastly that Haman Lee had been killed by Adnan Syed. It's not surprising that they thought this, given the very limited information that they had at the time of the murder and still had at the time of Adnan's release. I can be assured, as can you, that the Lees have never listened to Undisclosed or Truth and Justice or any of the other sources that trumpet Adnan's innocence. So right away, they started saying this was illegitimate. Why? Well, because the state of Maryland had done something so incredibly stupid that they had been given a wedge to drive into a chink in the wall of Adnan's innocence. And that was the idea that there is a Maryland law stating that if a conviction for murder is to be vacated at a hearing, the victim's family members have to be given enough notice to appear at the hearing in person and state their case about whether or not they think that the conviction should be overturned. The Lee family had moved to California after Hayes' death, and they were not given adequate notice to come to Baltimore for this hearing. Young Lee, Hayes' younger brother, 3 years younger, had appeared in a very poignant Zoom video that was played at the hearing, but they were not able to appear in person. They had called and asked for 3 days more notice, and this was denied. I find this refusal absolutely flummoxing, absolutely bewildering. Adnan Syed had been in prison for almost 22 years. What difference was 3 more days going to make, especially if those 3 days could assure the Lees that the hearing had been held properly? But alas, that did not happen. And the Lees fought and fought and fought. And finally, this past spring, Adnan's conviction was reinstated, but he was not given any additional jail time. His sentence was commuted to time served, and he was given 5 years supervised probation. That seems very unjust to those of us who think that he is absolutely innocent, but we'll take what we can get. Let's go back, though, to the time of Adnan's release and the time of the Lee's pushback. I was, of course, fascinated by this. But as I thought about this, especially the day after, when it started becoming obvious that Haman Lee's family was going to use every tool that they had to get Adnan back into prison, I thought two things. Number one, what I just said, the Lees will never give up. They will never give up, which, by the way, I do not criticize them for. I have great respect, indeed admiration, and certainly sympathy for this family, which I will be exploring more in the episodes that follow. So that was my first thought. They will not give up. They will not accept this. Unless, and this led to my second thought, the real murderer is definitely identified. It may not be that this murderer will ever be brought to trial and convicted, but if they could be convinced of who actually committed the crime, they could at least be at peace with the idea that Adnan Syed is walking around as a free man. Well, I thought, the only other suspect who was ever suspected and questioned at the time was the young man whom Hay was dating, whom she had taken up with after breaking up with Adnan and had started dating at the beginning of 1999, a young man named Donald Kleindienst III. I'd always kind of had a sneaking suspicion that he was probably guilty, but I had never really thought through the implications of how this would actually work. And the big stumbling block for me, as for most people who thought about this case, was always the question of his motive. Why on earth would he have killed Hay? They were having a great time together, weren't they? They had just started dating, and Hay was crazy about him. Those who ever bothered to try to assign some kind of motive to Don would usually come up with some kind of watered-down version of what was supposed to be Adnan's motive for killing her. Adnan's reasons were supposedly rooted in his Muslim faith, in the culture of shame, in the idea that he killed Hay in a fit of rage because she had broken up with him and taken up with another man. Something that did not quite square with a 17-year-old American-born teenager. But hey, the prosecution ran with what they could get, and they succeeded, at least at the time. So nobody could say that Don was some kind of devout Muslim seeking revenge upon his honor. But what people would say, again, if they bothered to try to come up with a motive at all, was something along the lines of, well, Don was afraid that Hay was going to break up with him. Some people even went further and said they were afraid that Hay was planning to go back to Adnan. And so therefore he killed her because if he couldn't have her, nobody else could either. So his motive was jealousy and possessiveness, whereas Adnan's was rage at besmirched honor. But they kind of boiled down to the same thing. But I had never thought that that motive made any sense at all. Hay had clearly been the aggressor in her relationship with Don. He had never shown the slightest flicker of this extreme possessiveness and jealousy, and so I just didn't buy it. And as I was thinking about this and just kind of mulling it over, all of a sudden, a phrase popped into my head. I remembered it as being said in Rabia Chaudhry's voice. And the words were, Hay wanted to go live with Don. And I thought, what? Hay wanted to go live with Don. Where have I heard that? I know I'm not imagining it. And I did try. I invested hours trying to track down that specific quotation. I looked through the transcripts of the HBO documentary. I did a search on Rabia's book, Adnan's Story. And I did somewhat of a search in the many, many episodes of the Undisclosed podcast. I never found Rabia saying those words, but I found something better. And here it is from Susan Simpson. It's from episode 4 of season 1 of Undisclosed, way back in 2015. So Susan Simpson is talking about the January 15th birthday party for Krista Myers. It was on the evening of Friday, and Hay had disappeared on Wednesday, but because of the huge ice storm that had moved into the area, not everybody understood that Hay had actually disappeared Wednesday afternoon. Hay was very close friends with Krista. She had promised faithfully that she would show up at a party, but she wasn't there. So here's what Susan has to say. This is directly from the transcript of the show with all the ums and uhs, so I'll read it as it appears. That's kind of what they, that is, Hay's friends, were thinking, like at Krista's party. Maybe she ran off with him, Don, somewhere. She'd mentioned to her French teacher that she and Don had plans to move in together. I don't know if that's what the students thought was going on, if maybe she'd gone ahead with those plans and just wasn't coming to school. All right, that lit a spark, if I may use a very overused metaphor. That was the spark that lit the fuse on the stick of dynamite that has led me to pursue this case now for almost 3 years, off and on, but mostly on. Why was this so telling? Because all of a sudden I thought, wait a minute. Hay was pushing to move in with Don because it was clear, as I said before, that Hay was the aggressor. Hay was the initiator. Don was the one who went along with what this very feisty, pretty, bright, funny girl wanted him to do. But he would never have suggested that she move in with him. So I thought, I wonder. Maybe the motive that spurred on this horrible tragedy was not jealousy at all. Maybe, as I said in the title of my chapter on this in my book, it was a breakup scene gone wrong, and Don was the one who was trying to do the breaking up. Maybe Hay did not react quite the way he thought she would, and there was a violent confrontation that led to her death. Well, if I was going to end up with that happening, I needed to go back to the beginning of the Hay and Don relationship. So let's take a look at when these two people met, which was back sometime in October of 1998. I'm going to say mid to late October. Hay has just turned, or if it's a little earlier in the month, is going to turn 18. Her birthday is October 15th. Dawn had turned 20 as of October 2nd of that year. Let me stop here and go off on a small side path and just say that a lot of sources will tell you that Don Kleindienst was 22 when he started dating Hay, and therefore he was a glamorous older man. He was 4 years older, but that is not true. Strange and unbelievable as it may seem, there were two Don Kleindiensts living in the Baltimore area at this time. One was Don III, who is the Don dating Hay, or who is going to shortly start dating Hay. And the other one was a young man named Don Jr., who was 22. Indeed, his dad was a Baltimore policeman. And that misunderstanding, that failure to check out sources, and believe me, folks, I am not a trained investigator, and it was not difficult for me to find this out at all. If you get a copy of my book, you will be linked to a rather heartwarming article about the father of this other Don Kleindienst. So Don Kleindienst Jr., son of a Baltimore cop, was indeed 22. This Don Kleindienst III, was only 20, and he was certainly not the son of a policeman. Indeed, he was the son of a man who had had dealings with the policeman. And Don Jr., Don Kleindienst III's father, was a very dark, violent man who abused his wife and also abused alcohol. And I give full details about this in my book. I looked up his criminal record. There are reports of calls coming in reporting abuse at the Kleindienst family household. And I can't think of anybody who would have made those calls except for his then current wife, a woman named Anita Baird. All right, that's the young man whom Hay meets sometime in October, when she walks into the Lens Crafters at the Owings Mills Mall, which is about 15 minutes away from Woodlawn High School, where she is attending the magnet program. She is already a very busy girl at this point in her life. So she's a senior. She's in the magnet program at Woodlawn. And this is back, remember, this is 1999. These magnet programs, these accelerated programs, AP programs, all of these different accelerated high-level college track programs are not all that common. We are told that students from all over the Baltimore area came to Woodlawn for their magnet program. It was quite a coup for Hayman Lee, who had only moved to the States when she was 12, from her native South Korea, to have gotten into this program. Some teacher must have spotted her in junior high or middle school and said, "There's a girl who's going places. I need to encourage her to apply to the magnet program." And proud as her mother must have been of her for being accepted into this prestigious program, it also meant that Hay got to move out of the orbit of her immediate family and community, and that was not something that her mother was pleased about. And in fact, since we're talking about Hay's mother, and since I've already mentioned Don's father, let me talk just a little bit more about the parents of Hay and of Don. So I've already mentioned Don's father, his mother, a woman, as I said, named Anita Baird. That's what she goes by now. So Baird must be her maiden name. was divorced from Don's father sometime in Don's early high school years. I got this information from Bob Ruff. He did not give sources, and I was not able to navigate the Maryland state marriage and divorce record, so I'm taking his word for it. We do know that by the time of Hayes' murder, Anita Baird was living with a woman named Catherine Michelle, and the two women were romantic partners, but they could not marry because same-sex marriage was not legal at the time. Maryland would not legalize that type of marriage until 2015. So Don has divorced parents, and his mother is living in a relationship that she cannot be sure will ever be able to be legalized. Interestingly enough, and I will be discussing this more later, the house where Catherine Michelle and Anita Baird live is less than half a mile from the townhouse where Don lived with his father, Don Jr. So that's the parental situation on Don's side. There is a stepmother in there somewhere. Don Jr. remarried after his divorce from his first wife. That second wife's name was Sharon. I have been unable to find out anything about her other than her name and a couple of images, which you can look at in my book. She sure would know a lot about what went on in the Kleindienst household, but she seems to have utterly disappeared. So I'll leave it at that. I've already mentioned the idea that Hay's mother was not, almost certainly, very happy about Hay attending a school that was outside her own community, and therefore was able to form her own friendships and have her own social life out from under her watchful eye. So what do we know about Hay's parents? Well, we know her mother was very strict, tried to hold Hay to a curfew, and was not very successful. We also know that Hay's parents, just like Don's, were separated, although they may never have been legally divorced, because when Yunhwa Kim, Hay's mother, her uncle, Taesoo Kim, her brother, Young Lee, she, and at least one and perhaps two children of her uncles came to America, her father stayed behind in Korea, and that there was no contact to speak of at all between the father and the rest of the family. We don't know why. We were only told at one point when the family was questioned about why the father had not come to America with the rest of the family that he didn't want to immigrate. I find this very puzzling. That is not a sufficient reason for this kind of severe break. Hay tells a couple of her friends, including Adnan, that she had been sexually abused in Korea. I cannot help but at least suspect that Hay's father may have been the culprit, and that that's why there was such a break within the family. Be that as it may, Hay's mother also had a rather complicated romantic life going on, just like Don's mother. Hay's mother had a fiancé in California, somebody she apparently met when the family first immigrated to America and spent some time, perhaps a year, in that state. And then when they moved on to Baltimore, where Hay's grandparents lived, so that would be her mother's parents, and it's her grandfather, by the way, who owns the car lot, not her uncle. Yunhua apparently kept up a relationship with this so-called fiancé because she took her two children out to California for the summer in either 1997 or 1998 to visit him. Whatever happened with him, we do not know. Just keep in mind, by the way, Hay does not have a father in California or a stepfather. I don't see any mention anywhere that Yunhua married this man. He was simply some kind of romantic interest in her life. Hay Min Lee does say something rather interesting in her diary. She says, "Anyway, my mommy," and then there are five words completely scribbled out, and we think that this may have been done by Yun Hua before she turned the diary over to the Baltimore City Police Department. And then Hay includes a rolls eyes emoji, and then she says, "I told her not to, but sigh, does she ever listen? 3?" I hope nothing bad happens to her. Poor mommy. So I have no idea what was going on with Hay's mother there, or if it even has anything to do with her romantic life. But it doesn't sound as if Yun Hua's life is completely clear and straightforward. So having looked a little bit at the family backgrounds of these two characters, let's see what happens to them after they meet in October of 1998. Interestingly enough, Hay does not mention meeting Don in her diary, her paper diary. That is, we do know from at least one mention in that diary that she also kept something on her computer. Her computer, which disappeared. Somewhere in the transfer between the Baltimore County Police Department, where her case was being looked at when she was simply a missing person, to the Baltimore City Police Department when her body was discovered in Leakin Park, which was in the jurisdiction of Baltimore City. We have no idea what happened to that computer. It probably had some very interesting things on it. But now, 25 plus years on, the chances of finding it and being able to access the information on it are slim to none. Maybe she mentioned Don on that computer in that journal, but we have no idea. What's going on in Hay's life at this point is that she's starting to realize that her relationship with this very attractive young man with the melting brown eyes, the football player, the golden boy of the school, Adnan Syed, is probably not going anywhere. And the big impetus for this comes, as anybody who's familiar with this case knows, at the homecoming dance, which takes place October 30th or 31st. It's a Friday or a Saturday. Hay and Adnan had been dating since the previous April, when Adnan had invited Hay to go to the junior prom with him. And so they had spent time together the rest of the school year and all summer. And they both really, really liked each other a lot and did a lot of hooking up together at various places. But then at the homecoming dance, Adnan's parents show up. Now, it's fair to say they did not go storming into the dance or anything like that. Shamin, Adnan's mother, had kept telling her husband, "Adnan is dating and he's not supposed to be dating girls." And the father kept saying, "Oh no, no, that can't be true. Look at his grades. He can't be dating." But of course he was. So she had persuaded him to come to the gym and see for himself. They did not go into the dance itself. They stood outside. They got someone to go into the dance and bring Adnan out, and they made him leave with them. He was embarrassed, humiliated, and absolutely outraged, and so was Hay, who had to leave, well, technically by herself, only her friends made it look so she had a boyfriend. Aisha Pittman, I believe, who was one of her very good friends, arranged for, I think it was her boyfriend named Sean, to walk out with Hay. So she didn't look like she had been left without a date. But it's from that point on that Hay starts talking about breaking up with Adnan. It's the very next week when she writes that really quite level-headed breakup note to Adnan, on which she scribbles the words, "I'm going to kill," at least on the back. I have no interest in trying to pick that apart. I have no idea. I don't think that scribbled notes during health class between two teenagers can be construed as legal evidence in a murder case, but what do I know? Anyway, she goes back and forth between the two young men. She's noticed Don. She's started hearing things about him, especially, I think, one thing that may have made him very attractive to her is the fact that, hey, he's out of high school. He lives with his dad. His parents are divorced. So he's got a lot of independence. Maybe, and I don't believe at all that she ever consciously thought this, but somehow in the back of her mind was the idea, maybe he's my ticket out of this repressive household where my mother's always yelling at me if I come home after curfew. And remember, Hay has turned 18. I think she thought, once I turn 18, all of this motherly attention will cease, but that had not happened. So that, little nugget, I think is what led to this idea of hers eventually that maybe she could just move out of the house. Maybe she could move in with Don. But Don, I believe, was not having it. So she says nothing in her diary at the time about meeting Don. It's interesting, though, and very, very poignant that her very last diary entry, at least in the paper one, which is on January 12th, says this: I love you, Don. I think I have found my soulmate. I love you so much. I fell in love with you the moment I opened my eyes to see you in the break room for the first time. So between October, we'll say October 30th, 31st, the disastrous dance, as we'll call it, and January 1st, when Hay and Don go out for their first date, Hay's feelings for this young man have blossomed. Although she periodically rebukes herself for being so inconstant. At one point she says, I'm just like my mother. Here's what she says on December 6th. I do love Adnan, but today I kept on imagining Don over my body instead of Adnan. Don, 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 Don. Why do I keep on thinking about your baby blues and your smiles? Don is what I would go for in my past. Blonde, blue eyes, white, built, sexy, and nice Camaro. Well, Don is blonde. He does have blue eyes or hazel eyes. He is white, and he does have a Camaro. I'm a little dubious about the built and sexy part, but I've never really seen a picture of him that goes any lower than shoulders. So did Hay just kind of primly flirt with Don, bat her eyes at him, that sort of thing? No, she absolutely did not. Here's what Don Kleindienst told Sarah Koenig on Serial. This, I believe, is from episode 9. Sarah Koenig managed to track Don down. He would not allow her to use his voice to have a recorded interview on the podcast, but he did consent to an interview and he did allow her to quote him. So here's what Sarah Koenig has to say. She pursued him, he said, for all of December, whenever she saw him at work. He said she'd ask him when he was going to take her out. Constantly, she asked him, followed him into the lunchroom on his break, pestered him. Now, as I say, I think Hay saw Don as a way of escape. We move on then to January 1st, which is the date of the first date between Don and Hay. The final breakup between Hay and Adnan, according to a number of sources, has taken place over the weekend of December 19th to 20th, the weekend before the week of winter break. And so there's been a final breakup, but it's been quite amicable. Hay has given Adnan a really nice present, a jacket, And there don't seem to ever be any hard feelings. This is very important to this case. And of course, Adnan is going to go on to have quite the time with girls in his life between that breakup and the time that he is arrested for Hay's murder on February 28th. I have counted at least three girls and maybe four whom he has been romantically at least interested in during that time. That young man does not let any grass grow under his feet, I have to tell you. But let's look at what happens between Hay and Don. So this is from Hay's diary again, which, if you think about it, that's our one firsthand source. Let's see what she says. On Thursday, 12:31, I picked up Adnan from his work and dropped him off at Sears so he could pick up his car. So note, even though they are officially broken up, they're still friends. She's still doing favors for him. I thought of waiting for him, but for some reason I had, all caps, to go to OMM, which stands, of course, for Owings Mills Mall. When I got there, I saw his Camaro, which was surprising since he wasn't working that day. Now, I have in parentheses here, how did Hay know this? She must have been keeping a close eye on Don's work schedule. Also, some people have interpreted this, but for some reason I had to go to the mall, as something meaning that she had to pick up her paycheck. So it may not be that she was stalking Don. Besides, she didn't think he was working that day, but she goes by and she immediately spots his red Camaro. All right, now let's see what happens. Well, when I was going to pull up next to his car, he was walking toward his car. I stopped and talked to him, flirting around with him, all caps, as usual. Well, he actually let me drive his car around OMM. What a car! Well, we flirted around a little more and finally decided to go for dinner on the 1st. I mean, what a day to start a new year. I want you to notice her wording here. We flirted around a little more and finally decided to go for dinner. There's a strong whiff of this being Hay's idea. So they go to a restaurant in Aberdeen, Maryland called the Olive Tree. I just want to set the record straight here. They did not go to an Olive Garden. Not that there's anything wrong with Olive Garden, I guess. But the Olive Tree is a restaurant that's well known for its food, and it's still in existence. I looked it up. In a couple of years, when my husband and I go on a big East Coast trip, I wonder if maybe we could have dinner there. Hay waxes rhapsodic about the crab cakes and about the conversation. And she also says that Don doesn't kiss her because he's too much of a gentleman. Does this initiate a spate of going out to dinner at nice restaurants? No, it does not. On January 1st, there are less than 2 weeks of this relationship left because there are less than 2 weeks left of Hay's life. During that time, we know of only one other time when Hay and Don actually went out on a date. Went somewhere in public. And that was a double date with Aisha Pittman, the previously mentioned good friend, and her boyfriend. They went to see, if you're interested in such things, Shakespeare in Love, and they went to dinner at a Ruby Tuesdays. Now, this idea that Don was so much older is emphasized by Aisha. She was interviewed on Serial, and she says, it was the most awkward double date in the world because he was older. I forget how old he was, but he was significantly older than us, and my boyfriend was 2 years younger, so it was just a horrible double date. Now, I don't know how to reconcile this. Don was not that much older. He was barely 20. So why is Aisha saying that? Well, We're going to be listening in a later episode to the testimony of a woman named Deborah Renner, who worked with Don. She has a very interesting story to tell, but you'll have to wait on getting that story. She says that Don gave her the creeps, and they had a very dark personality. So all I can suggest here is that that's what struck Aisha, not so much his elderliness. I've seen pictures of the guy. He doesn't look old. He doesn't look older than 20, although I will have to admit that I'm not sure what the date is of the main picture I have for him. So they go out on January 1st, and the fights with her mother over her staying out too late, this time with Don, start immediately. So any idea she might have had that getting a new boyfriend who's not a Muslim instead of a Roman Catholic, although I don't think Don had any particular church affiliation at all, this idea that Don would somehow be better, as far as her mother was concerned, vanished into thin air. And Hay becomes, I think, more and more determined that she's going to get out from under the thumb of her mother, and she becomes more and more willing to do whatever she needs to do to try to get Don to invite her into his life. And so here we come to a piece of evidence that has been absolutely misunderstood, but which tells us something very interesting about how Hay was starting to change her behavior because of Don. And this is the famous, what's usually called, Don note. It's a note that was found folded up in the trunk of her car after the car was discovered, February 28th. Hay's body has been found on February 9th, and her car isn't found for several weeks after that. There's no date on the note. Don's name is written on the outside of the note, however, something that's not always mentioned. Here's what the note says in its entirety. Hey, cutie. Sorry I couldn't stay. I have to go to a wrestling match at Randallstown High, but I promise to page you as soon as I get home by 7. Till then, take care and drive safely. Always, spelled with a Z, Hey. P.S. The interview went well, and I promise to tape it so you can see me as many and as often as you want. And then she has a little smiley face. So up until the Undisclosed podcast team, especially Susan Simpson, got to work on this whole note provenance, the assumption was that this note had been written to Don on the day of Hay's murder, and that the reason why it was left behind in her car and never given to him was that she had been killed before she could give it to him. But that is not true. This note was not written on January 13th. This note was written on January 5th. How do we know this? As I say, because of the stellar investigative work of the Undisclosed team, especially Susan Simpson, who sadly is not participating in the new relaunch of Undisclosed. She's off doing other projects and podcasts. But she decided, let's just see if there was actually a wrestling match at Randallstown High School on January 13th. Hay was a student manager of the wrestling team, the boys' wrestling team, and she also had kind of a trainee under her wing, a young woman named Summer. And Summer showed up on cereal, and she said, Hay never showed up for that wrestling match. I was really mad because I didn't know what I was doing. So everybody thought, she was intercepted somehow before she could get to that wrestling match. But as I say, the wrestling match was on January 5th. Summer was simply wrong about the date. She put two things together in her mind, that Hay disappeared and that Hay didn't show up for an obligation. And she, her mind, not she consciously, decided, they're the same day, but they're not. Now, we are going to be looking in great detail in a later episode at Asia McClain's alibi claim for Adnan. This is sort of like Summer's alibi for Hay, because the reason why she gets in touch with Sarah Koenig during the broadcast of the serial podcast episodes is that she hears that the state case is that Hay was dead by 2:36, and she thinks that cannot be true. I was talking to Hay in the gym. So she shows up on serial. Sarah Koenig says, "You're sure that this is the day because it's the day she didn't show up?" And Summer says, "I'm positive. I am positive. I'm very positive. I looked for her the whole time at the away game. I was really pissed because I thought that she stood me up." Well, guess what, Summer? Hay did stand you up. My theory is that this note was written when she thought that Don was not going to show up at a meeting that she had tried to put together with Don, probably in the parking lot of the Owings Mills Mall. Summer says that Hay was supposed to go on the bus for this away wrestling match at Randallstown, which is about 10 minutes north of Owings Mills Mall. And Hay had said, "I'll tell you what, I'm not going to come on the bus. I'm going to drive my own car, but I'll see you there." And Summer was a little worried about this because she was a brand new trainee and judging wrestling matches is kind of tricky. I've actually gone to one in my life and I could not tell what was going on to save my life. So it's a lot more than just putting numbers down in boxes. And so Summer was worried. Hay reassured her. And then Hay didn't show up. What does that tell us? Well, I think what happened was that Hay waited and waited and waited in the parking lot, hoping that Don would come out to see her. And then he did come out. She had been on the point of leaving. She had scribbled this note. I'm thinking she was getting ready to stick it under his windshield wiper or in his window or something. And she ended up probably going into the mall with him, maybe going back into the lab and sitting with him and keeping him company, as she would have put it. And she never showed up for the match. This is just a little over a week before her murder. And this was very un-Hay-like behavior. Why does she do it? Because she wants to spend time with Don. So we have two dates. We have a missed obligation on Hay's part. We know she missed the obligation. And then we also have another set of events that starts occurring between Hay and Don, and that is that Hay starts going over to his house after her work shift at LensCrafters is over. Typically, she will work a 6 to 10 p.m. shift on a weeknight. And then she drives over to Don's house. Now, let me point something out here, and this is going to be important later on in our timeline of the murder, but I'll put it in here too. Don lives 40 miles away from Owings Mills Mall. Why is he working at a mall that's so much farther away from him than the closest mall, Hunt Valley, which is only 23 miles? Well, that's a whole story that we'll get into also in a later episode. But one of the things that happens during these evening visits, and we have no idea how many of them there were, Hay and Don become sexually intimate. How do we know this? Because Don is asked about this at trial. He says, he is asked by Christina Gutierrez, "Had you ever been intimate with her before her death?" He says, "Yes," after Kevin Urich lodges an ineffective objection. Gutierrez says, "And so the intimacy occurred sometime after your first date, correct?" Don answers, "Yes." She says, "And sometime before her disappearance and death, correct?" Don says, "Yes." I hate to say this, but I just wonder if Don thought, well, she's pretty and she's making herself available, so why not? My heart kind of bleeds for Hay. She wanted so badly to be a part of this young man's life, and I believe that desire led to her death. Okay, now let's move on to January 12th, Tuesday, January 12th, day before Hay's death. So Don, when he was questioned later, and of course we're going to go into great detail about all of the police reports on Don, and contrary to common conventional wisdom here, Don was questioned a number of times by the Baltimore County Police. It is true that he was never questioned by the Baltimore City Police, but the Baltimore County Police actually made some very good efforts with Don, which I will be detailing in a later episode. And so he admitted to having seen Hay the night of the 12th. And he also admitted that they had then talked on the phone well into the wee hours of the 13th. But then he said, I never saw her or heard from her after that. I'm going to postulate here that this visit on the night of the 12th and then this very long phone call, hours long phone call until 3 a.m. the next morning, centered around Hay's desire to move in with him, and that he kept pushing back, and that at some point during this long phone call, Don realized, I'm going to just have to break up with her. Not kill her. Please don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. Hay's death was totally unpremeditated. How do we know this? Because she was strangled manually, which, unless we're talking about some kind of weird serial killer situation with someone getting off on the feeling of putting his hands around somebody's neck and squeezing, manual strangulation is always a mark of a crime of the moment, an unpremeditated crime of passion, because otherwise you'd have a weapon. So Adnan is sometimes badmouthed because he never tried to call or page Hay after the 13th, but he has perfectly good reasons for not doing that. He did not call Hay's home very much, and he was keeping in touch through her friends. But for Don to never call her, for Don to never try to find out why she never showed up on the night of the 13th, which he says she was supposed to do, that has never been fully pressed in upon him. Let's move on to the day of the murder, January 13th, 1999. What do we know about this day? I'm not going to go through a class schedule or anything like that. We know a couple of things that are very germane to the murder, or at least for Hay getting to the place where she is murdered, which is a little different. First of all, there's this whole Adnan asked Hay for a ride. First she said yes, and then she said no, kettle of fish. What's with that? Well, when you actually look at the dates and you realize how few school days there are, it becomes very clear what actually happened here. January 13th, 1999 is still within that particular year's dates of Ramadan, the Muslim yearly celebration of about a month, I believe. I think it's 28 days, which involves fasting during the day and feasting at night as soon as the sun goes down, and lots of special prayers and services at the mosque. Because of fasting during the day, the track coach, Coach Sai, testified at trial. He did not make observant Muslims do anything too heavy duty during track practice. Adnan, although he certainly was not adhering to the strict rules that his mother laid down about girls, was keeping to the outward observances of the Muslim faith in this regard. And so he had to show up for track practice. And by the way, apparently he was pretty good at this sport. He would not have wanted to have to walk all the way down to the athletic field. The first part of January, the weather had been too cold for track practice or indeed any practices to be held outdoors. They had been held in the gym. But we know that January 13th was an unusually warm day for January. It was in the 50s. And so I have imagined that there was an announcement that morning during homeroom. Track practice will be held outdoors today. And Adnan sitting there thinking, oh, great, I'll have to hike down to the field. But we know from the testimony of several of Adnan's friends that it was pretty typical for him to ask to be dropped off at that field by people who were going that way anyway. There was no parking down at that field, and it was about a half a mile from the school building. And hey, he's going to be running laps for several hours, even if it's not Ramadan and he's being given a lighter schedule. So he would think, well, I'm going to be exerting myself quite a bit for the next 2 hours. Let's at least lop off one of those half-mile hikes. And so he'd get friends, including Hay, to drop him off. So according to, I think, a couple of witnesses, he asked Hay that morning, hey, will you drop me off at the field this afternoon? Will you give me a ride? He's not asking for a ride home or to the car repair shop. That is mentioned, by the way, in that diary entry that I just read to you earlier on December 31st. That's when Hay dropped him off at the car repair store. He's asking her to drop him off at track practice because he's just found out that track practice is outdoors that day. And she says, okay, this is the only day that this asking Hay for a ride scenario works. We know it was Ramadan because Coach Sy, although he could not remember the exact date on the stand, he did remember having a conversation with Adnan at track practice on an unseasonably warm day in January that was still during Ramadan. And the only day that works is January 13th. Later in the afternoon, as attested to by, I believe, Becky and Takira. We'll go with those. They remember that there was a conversation between Hay and Adnan in the hallway sometime, let's say, before the last hour, we'll assume, in which Hay says, Adnan, I can't give you a ride after all. Something has come up. And he says, okay, no problem. I'll check with somebody else. Then we know that on that same day, although she kind of recanted this story later, Debbie Warren remembers Hay saying, as the school bell rings and the day ends and Hay is leaving in a hurry, I have to go meet Dawn at the mall. And that's the last time anyone except her killer sees her alive. She never shows up to pick up her little cousin at the daycare center, which she is supposed to do every regular school day by 3:15. She never comes home. She's never seen alive again. And it will be 28 agonizing days until her body is found strangled in Leakin Park. So she rushes off. She gets into her 1998 Nissan Sentra, which I will remind you is a brand new car, given to her by her mother by way of her grandfather, the car dealer owner. She drives off. Where does she go? Well, she goes exactly where she said she was going to go. She goes to the mall to meet Dawn. What's the purpose of this meeting? Well, I think I've laid out my reasoning for why Dawn had started feeling very pushed into a level of relationship that he just was not up for. Now, there's another reason to do with this not feeling that he wants Hay in his life anymore, and that has to do with the probable re-entry into his life of an old girlfriend, the woman he's now married to, Robin Kelly Kleindienst, Robin Kelly at the time. But we will explore the ideas about her in a later podcast. She's somebody who showed up in the most recent undisclosed episodes, and I want to give her the attention that she's due. But he has decided, I need to break up with this girl. I cannot let her keep trying to move in with me. I cannot let her, if I'm correct about Robin, I cannot let her spoil things with Robin. And so I need to keep it short and sweet. I need to limit the time. I need to control the situation. I'll page her. We know from the January 5th Dawn note that they paged each other. That was their main source of communication. Neither one of them had a cell phone. That's what came up that afternoon. Colin Miller says, probably she got a page. There would be no reason for anybody at school to page her. She got a page. And I'm not sure, it would very much depend on the model of the pager, how much information could be conveyed. It's possible that Hay had to call him from a payphone at the school. That's not clear at all. But the implication of the page would be, come by and see me before you go pick up your cousin. I need to see you before then. For Dawn, this means, I need to see you and break up with you before you show up at my house tonight with a packed suitcase. To Hay, it means, hey, pack your suitcase and show up at my house tonight. I want you to move in. Two totally at odds views of what the other person wants from this relationship. What happens? Hay goes racing up 695 and 795 and gets into the parking lot of Owings Mills Mall. She goes to the place where she and Dawn have gone out and sat in his car in many a break since they've started dating. We know that from fellow employees of Dawn and Hay. She pulls up, and there he is. He gets into the passenger seat of her car. Her heart is racing. This is going to be so great. And then he opens his mouth and starts telling her words she does not want to hear. Come back next week to hear what I think happened next.